the god's priests, Ahriman's as well. Alesh took the letter reverently, handling it the way a man might hold a priceless jewel. "You must take this there and deliver it to a woman by the name of Catherine Alar," the Chosen said, leaning close and holding Alesh's gaze. "Her and no other." Alesh swallowed hard at the sudden seriousness in the Chosen's voice, and nodded. "I will, sir, but forgive me. Why?" He hesitated, suddenly unsure. "Why didn't I just tell you directions, or get someone to lead you there?" Alesh had been thinking that, and something about his expression must have given it away, because the Chosen laughed. "Perhaps it is too long since I have used Ahriman's gift, and wanted only to feel it once more." He shrugged. "At least now you will not have to ask for directions." "And why does that second bit feel more important than the first?" Alesh thought. But Ahriman was speaking once more. "Thank you, Alesh. Oh, and see Abigail about a change of clothes." "Sir?" The Chosen looked out at the city, a frown on his face. "News of the attack will have already spread into the city. People will be angry and scared and looking for someone to blame. It's best that you don't wear your servant's whites. I don't want them taking their anger for me out on you. I've had Abigail set some clothes aside. See her before you leave."
"But, sir," Alesh said, startled, "they can't blame you. You've done everything—"
"I've done nothing," Ahriman growled, and Alesh recoiled in shock at the sudden fury in the man's tone. He'd never seen the Chosen lose his temper before, and he was suddenly terribly aware that he was talking to the most powerful man in all of Entana, a man who had, if the stories were to be believed, slain hundreds of the Night's creatures with his bare hands, who had defeated even the Nightling King Argush in single combat.
"I'm sorry, sir,"
he managed, the words coming out as a croak from a mouth that had gone impossibly dry.
"I didn't mean to offend you."
Ahriman sighed. "No, I'm the one who's sorry, Alesh. It's not your fault. But the fact is that I have failed them. It is my job to keep the city safe, yet the attacks keep coming." His face twisted in sudden fury. His eyes flashed a brilliant gold, and he slammed a fist against the stone wall. There was an ear-splitting crack, and the stone spider-webbed like glass beneath a hammer. "Simeon was a good man," the Chosen growled. "A good friend, and I could not protect him." Alesh stared at the cracked stone in shock, desperately wishing that he was somewhere else, anywhere else. Several tense seconds passed, and finally Ahriman took a slow, deep breath. "Please forgive me, Alesh," he said in a weary voice. "Sometimes I think Ahriman was a fool to choose me."
Sir?
Alesh asked, his blood going cold in his veins. In all the time Alesh had known him, Chosen Ahriman had always seemed to be all-powerful, a man who had all the answers, who could do anything he wished. Alesh had never before seen the man so full of doubt, and it left him feeling helpless and terrified. "Never mind," the Chosen said. "I'm just tired, boy, that's all. It has been a trying few months. Still, do not be angry with the people. They are right to be upset. I have failed them. If it helps them to have someone to blame, then that, at least, I can do for them." Distant shouts rose up to them from the street, and Ahriman glanced out the window. "Ah, it seems that Parr is at it again. I wonder how that man ever gets any sleep." Alesh followed the Chosen's gaze, and was only half aware of his muscles going rigid. A procession of what looked to be about 2 dozen men and women in black and red marched down the street in front of the castle. The Redeemers had been around for years, but since the attacks began, it seemed that they were in the streets nearly every day, parading and urging the people to forsake Ahriman, god of fire and light, and put their faith instead in Shira, goddess of the wild and Amidan's wife. Alesh's lip curled in anger. No doubt they were, even now, using Lord Simeon's death as a means to show Ahriman and Ahriman's ineffectiveness.
"You don't like them, do you?" the Chosen asked.
"They're dangerous," Alesh thought. "Why can't you see that?"
But he said,
There's something strange about them, sir. I guess they just make me nervous. Why do they all carry weapons, anyway?
What he really wanted to ask was why the Chosen allowed them to carry weapons, but he would not. Servants did not question their masters. The old man smiled knowingly, as if hearing Alesh's thoughts.
They would tell you, I suspect, that the weapons are to protect themselves and others from the night's creatures. He shrugged. I doubt that half of them know how to use them anyway, though I am sure that there are those among them who do.
Alesh nodded dubiously.
Yes, sir. So they're harmless, then?
No, the Chosen said. They are far from harmless, as I believe you've already guessed. But their danger is not in the weapons they carry. It is in their words. With a blade or a mace, a man can slay another, Alesh. But with words, with ideas, he can slay a nation.
Maybe, Alesh thought. But I'd rather get hit with an idea than a mace any day.
Forgive me, sir, but why let them stay, then?
Because they are mine to protect, the Chosen said grimly. As well as I might. Tell me, are you excited for Fair Day tomorrow? Again, the abrupt change of topic.
Yes, sir, he said,
knowing it for a lie as he said it.
That is well, then.
They stood in silence for several moments then, gazing out at the city spread out before them, at the thousands going about their daily lives. Alesh found himself imagining what it would be like to be the Chosen, to be the one that all of those thousands looked to for protection, and he felt a sudden wave of guilt. While he complained about being a servant or having to spar with Kale, the Chosen spent his hours looking after a people who at best feared him, and at worst despised him. No wonder the man seemed so lonely sometimes. And now the one true friend he'd had was dead. Alesh felt an overpowering compassion for the man beside him, this man who had sacrificed so much for his people without ever asking for anything in return. He opened his mouth to speak, not sure of what he was about to say, but the Chosen spoke first.
I suppose it's time you were off, he said, not looking away from the view. You'll have to hurry back in time for your training session with Kale as it is.
Alesh stood there for a moment, wanting to say something, but the words would not come, and finally he nodded.
Yes, sir.
He turned and started away.
Oh, and Alesh?
He stopped and looked back. The Chosen was watching him intently, his blue eyes flashing like chips of ice.
Remember, Catherine Allah and no other, before you visit the wall.
Yes, sir.
He waited in case the man would say anything else, but he'd already turned back to the window. In that moment, with the sunlight illuminating the deep lines of his face, his shoulders slumped under a weight too heavy for any man to bear, he looked impossibly old and frail, like a man close to death.
Don't be a fool, Alesh told himself. He's lived this long, and he'll live a long time yet.
The thought gave him little comfort, though, and he turned and hurried away, not daring to look back. Chapter 4 Alesh was changing into the clothes Abigail had laid out in his room for him when a bundle fell from his tunic, and he realized with a shock that he'd forgotten to mention the knife to Aliman.
Idiot, he thought.
He slid the cloth-wrapped knife underneath his bed, then turned back to his new clothes.
Nobleman's clothes, he thought, examining the finely made black trousers and the white silk shirt.
These clothes would have cost more money than Alesh owned, as fine or finer than many of the tunics and breeches he saw adorning visiting nobles and dignitaries. Why, then, had the Chosen asked him, a servant, to wear them?
Never mind, he thought. He has his reasons.
But the thought gave him little comfort, and he couldn't help feeling like an impostor as he walked out of his quarters, the tightness of the clothes an unpleasant change from the loose servant's garb he normally wore. He'd only just arrived in the city streets when he saw the Redeemers, one of them, a handsome man with long, dark hair and a too wide grin, stood in the street, preaching on the greatness of Shira. Even as Alesh approached, the man raised his voice in condemnation.
Do you not see, people of Ilrica, the folly of your ways?
How many must die before you realize that Amadan has forsaken you? Either that, or he and his chosen."
The man spat the word contemptuously.
"Are powerless against the creatures of the night. But do not be afraid, for the holy goddess Shira in all of her glory."
Alesh glanced around him, despair welling up in his chest. A crowd of about 30 had gathered, and were nodding along as the man spoke, shouting out their agreement. Not many, perhaps, but more than there had been a month before, that was certain. Alesh's hands knotted into fists at his sides, and he forced his way through the crowd, gritting his teeth in barely suppressed anger. He finally made it through and let out a breath as he turned a corner in the street.
"Spare a coin, my lord?"
He turned at the sound of the voice, and saw a woman in a ratty wool dress, a too thin young child, clinging to her side. He glanced around for a moment, confused, before he realized that she was speaking to him.
I'm sorry, he said. I have no money.
She nodded as if she'd expected such an answer, and started down the street. The young boy glanced at him with large, vacant eyes, before hurrying after her. Alesh frowned at the clothes he wore, checked to make sure the letter the Chosen had given him was secure in his tunic, and continued on, feeling more and more like a fool with each step he took. As he walked, he saw several people who'd apparently decided to get an early start on the Fair Day celebration, staggering drunkenly down the sides of the street. Carts laden with various goods clogged the main thoroughfare, and drivers shouted at horses and people alike, demanding room that just wasn't there. Along the sides of the street, tailors, smiths, jewelers, chandlers, and merchants of all types were busily setting up stalls and unpacking their goods. Already, the streets were alive with the sounds of their shouts as they hawked their wares to the passers-by. Children darted between the crowds, laughing and chasing each other, and pausing occasionally to stare at the stalls and decorations with wide, eager eyes. Despite the recent attacks, or perhaps because of them, everyone seemed determined to have a good time. Alesh wished he could share their excitement, but all he could think about was how old Olimon had looked, standing in the window's light, how weak, like a man at the end of his strength. And what of the errand he'd given Alesh? Who was Catherine Elar, and why had Olimon asked him to deliver the letter? After all, there were plenty of message-bearers who he could have sent. The thought made him feel at once honoured and more than a little uneasy.
"Watch out, my lord!"
someone shouted. Distracted by his thoughts, Alesh had wandered into the street, and he let out a cry of surprise as he jumped to the side, barely avoiding being run over by a horse-drawn cart. The driver shouted an apology, but Alesh heard him mutter a curse about drunken noblemen as he passed. Apparently, the upcoming festivities hadn't infected everybody after all. He took a minute to let his racing heart calm, and then, suddenly frantic, he reached into his tunic for the letter, sure that it would be gone. For a moment, his questing fingers found nothing, and he was just about to run into the cart-filled street in search of it, when he felt the paper in his hand and withdrew it, breathing an audible sigh of relief. "Idiot," he thought. "Less than an hour away from the castle, and you've already nearly failed at the Chosen's task." Alesh gripped the letter tightly, and once more began winding his way through the crowds. In time, he came to the building Olimon had shown him, and for several seconds he stood in the street staring at it, sure that he'd went to the wrong place after all. The golden glow was still there, but faded, draped across the place like mist, though if any of the passers-by could see it, they gave no sign. What had given Alesh pause, however, was not the golden glow, but the run-down, dilapidated state of the place. The front door of the inn sat askew in its frame, and the sign hung crookedly above its door. He was sure that it had once said the full tankard, but either kids, or the worst vandals of all weather and time, had defaced it, so that it read instead, "H. Full Card." Alesh took a deep breath, tucked the letter carefully into his tunic once more, and went inside. Pipe smoke drifted through the common room of the inn like a thick fog, obscuring the faces of the people who sat at the crowded tables, and making his throat instantly scratchy and raw. After a moment, the smoke parted like a curtain, and a heavy-set woman in her 40s seemed to materialize in front of him. Her dress was scandalously low-cut, and the thick coating of face paint she wore did little to conceal features that were homely at best.
"Well, hello there, my lord," she said. She looked him up and down and then gave him a lecherous wink. "My, well, you're a big fella, aren't you? I bet your woman is mighty pleased."
"I don't have a woman, ma'am," he replied, and immediately realized it had been the wrong thing to say. The woman grinned, displaying a row of crooked yellow teeth.
"Surely it can't be true, my lord." "Well," she said, stepping so close that her massive bosom pressed against him, "how would you like to change that?"
Alesh felt his face heat, and the woman laughed.
"Oh, now, don't you tell me you're a first-timer, honey. Not with that face, surely."
Her hand ran across his chest, down toward his stomach.
"And not with this body? Why, Hamadan be praised, it's like running my hand across rock."
She drew closer still, and it was all Alesh could do to keep from taking a step back.
"Why, I wonder if all of you is so hard," she breathed,
her sour breath hot on his face, and he caught her hand just as it was slipping below his waistline. "I'm sorry, ma'am," he said, struggling to regain his composure, "but I'm here on business." The woman apparently wasn't accustomed to rejection. The gods knew why not. She frowned, all traces of her good humour gone.
"What, are you a boy lover? Is that it?"
"I'm no boy lover," he said, resisting the urge to say that he was no troll lover either. "But I am here on behalf of my master. I wonder, ma'am, do you know..."
"Your master, huh?"
she spat, her chest heaving grotesquely as she raised her voice. "Well, take it somewhere else. We don't want any of it here." Alesh noticed that some of the tavern's nearby patrons, hard, angry-looking men, were beginning to gaze at him with hard, angry looks. "I'm sorry, ma'am. You must have misunderstood. If you could just tell me where to find—"
"Hey! You!"
Alesh turned to see a giant of a man rise from one of the nearby tables. His arms and chest were powerfully built, though the effect was ruined somewhat by a bulging stomach that was no doubt a product of too many nights spent in places such as this one. He ran a hand through his black, filthy beard and stalked forward, weaving in what Alesh took to be a sign that the alcohol was doing its work.
"Are you giving Martha a hard time, or are you just hard of hearing? She done told you we don't want your kind around here."
Alesh forced himself to take a deep, slow breath. He was here on behalf of the Chosen, and the last thing he wanted to do was get into a fight. "Listen, sir, I'm not trying to give anyone a hard time. I'm looking for—"
"The door,"
the man interrupted with a growl, as he grabbed a hold of the front of Alesh's shirt and jerked him forward.
"Don't worry, princess,"
he hissed, his breath rank with the smell of liquor and rot.
"I'll show you, but first I think you need to be taught some manners."
Enough, Alesh thought. Dimly, he was aware that the scar on his shoulder had begun to burn, but it was a small, inconsequential thing next to his rising anger. He needed to find the woman the Chosen had told him about, and he didn't have time to spend on some drunk that wanted to show just how big his balls were. The man was considerably larger than him, and almost certainly stronger. Once, he might have even been dangerous, but time and drink had done their work, and after years spent training with the Chosen and his apprentice, it was easy enough to see the blow coming. The man swung at him with a meaty fist, and Alesh ducked the attack casually, then struck the man in the stomach. The drunk's belly yielded beneath Alesh's fist like uncooked dough, and he staggered, belching out the sour odour of alcohol, gasping for air. Before he could gather himself, Alesh pivoted and hit him again, harder. The man's breath left him in a gurgling wheeze, his knees buckled and he crumpled to the ground in a heap. The sight of the man struggling for air on the ground did little to pacify Alesh's anger, and he stood there, fists clenched at his sides, trying to force his raging heart to slow. The man choked out something unintelligible, and Alesh leaned down, putting his ear close to the man's face.
"I'm sorry. What was that?"
"Bastard,"
the man croaked. Fresh anger welled up in Alesh at the man's words, at the uselessness and idiocy of this man who would start a fight in a tavern with a stranger while the city came unraveled around him. The anger turned to rage as he met the man's hateful gaze. The scar burned feverishly now, but Alesh took little notice.
He felt the rage building and building, an unstoppable river pressing against a dam too weak and frail to stop it, and then, inevitably, the dam broke. And then there was only darkness. When Alesh came to, someone was screaming. He was still standing, his chest heaving, his knuckles aching and covered in blood. He looked down and saw that the man still lay at his feet. His nose was broken, twisted grotesquely, and blood covered his face. One of his eyes was swollen shut, and his bottom lip sported a bloody cut. What's more, he seemed to be unconscious. "What in the night did I do?" Alesh thought in shock, as he stared at his bloody, shaking hands. He glanced up and saw the two men the drunk had been sitting with, standing up at their table. Alesh met their eyes, and they swallowed, glancing nervously at each other before easing back down into their seats. Alesh felt hot with disgust and shame, but when he turned to the wide-eyed, frightened servant girl, some part of him felt a dark satisfaction, and he found it was all he could do to keep from grinning. "Now then," he said, allowing the politeness to enter his tone once more. "I wonder if anyone can help me. I'm looking for a woman named Catherine Erlar."
"She's Mr. Catherine Erlar. I can tell you where—"
He held up a hand, and their mouths snapped shut hard enough that Alesh heard teeth clack together. "I only need one person to tell me where she is. I can't understand when everyone's speaking at once. How about you?" he said, jabbing a finger at the serving maid. She jumped, as if he'd pointed a dagger at her.
"The thing is, she's busy right now," she said in a whiny voice.
She must have seen something in Alesha's expression, because she raised her hands as if to ward off a blow.
I can go and fetch her, of course, if you want, sir, but she won't be long now."
Alesh considered for a minute and shook his head. "No, that's all right. I'll just sit over here and wait." He started toward a nearby table, and then the dark side of him made him turn back. "That is, of course," he said, eyeing each person in turn, "unless anyone has a problem with that." People at the tables closest to him began studying their drinks as if trying to divine the future from their murky depths, and the serving girl suddenly realized that someone on the far end of the room needed her help. Nodding, a warm, almost animal-like thrill of pleasure racing through him, Alesh walked to the table and sat. After a few minutes, the giant's friends went to him, lifted his unconscious form between the two of them, and started for the door, snatching looks at Alesh over their shoulders as if he was a lion that might pounce at any moment. He watched them go, feeling more in control, more powerful than he ever remembered having felt before. He hadn't been in a real fight since he was little, and as much as Alesh hated being Kale's practice dummy, he was forced to admit that he'd grown a lot stronger from his time spent in the role. He hadn't realized how much, in fact, until the big man had attacked him. For years, he'd only ever fought in practice bouts against Kale, and it always seemed to him that the Chosen was intent on watching him get beaten. Rare were the times that Alesh arrived at the bouts without having just finished a long day of labor that left him so exhausted he could barely stand, and when he did, the Chosen inevitably decided to make Kale practice sword fighting against an unarmed opponent, or, one of his favorites, archery against a moving target. The arrows were blunted, of course, and the thick padding Alesh wore kept him from getting seriously injured, but it also slowed him down, and though the arrows might not be lethal, they hurt plenty, leaving big, ugly bruises that ached for days afterward. True, he'd blacked out, as he had yesterday, a thing he hadn't done since he was a child, and that was worrying, but the fact was that after years of losing to Kale, it felt good to actually win, for someone else to be the one limping away for a change. For a moment, when he'd fought the man, all of the uncertainties of the day, all of his worries and fears had vanished. For once in his life, he'd been in control, and it had been a good feeling. "No," a voice in his head corrected. "That's not it, or not all of it, anyway. It wasn't just the control. You liked hurting him, liked watching him lying there, gasping for breath. And the others, you liked the way they looked at you, the way they were scared of you. And what about the blackout? Nothing for years, and then two in as many days. And your scar, why did it burn as if—" "No," he whispered, his voice harsh. I'm no monster. But even as he said it, a part of him remembered the feel of the man's stomach beneath his fist, remembered the frightened looks the others had given him, remembered and reveled in it. Several of the people nearby turned to eye him warily, but Alesh ignored them. Let them think what they wanted. Alesh hadn't asked for trouble, and the man had got what he'd had coming to him. And if Alesh had gone a little farther than he had intended, well, people got hurt in fights. After all, the man had tried to hurt him, hadn't he? He looked away from the wary stares, studying his hands. He was surprised to find that they were knotted into fists so tightly that his knuckles were stark white where they weren't covered in blood. He forced them to relax, and as they did, the crumpled letter fell onto the tabletop. Alesh grunted in surprise. In his anger, he'd forgotten all about the letter. He laid it on the table, and saw to his dismay that several drops of blood stained the fine white parchment. He tried to wipe the blood off, but succeeded only in smearing it, and had to content himself with smoothing the paper as best he could on the flat tabletop. Staring at the letter made him think of the Chosen, and he felt a fresh stab of guilt. The High Priest never would have used his power to hurt someone because of something as selfish as pride. But then, he'd never have to, would he? Alesh thought bitterly. He was the Chosen, after all. Sure, merchants might complain, nobles might whine, and the members of the council might try to manipulate him, but no one would ever be stupid enough to attack one of Amidan's Chosen, let alone Olimon, the most powerful and leader of the Six. What did Olimon know of being chased by children with rocks because of a scar he couldn't remember getting, or of waking up to find his mother and father gone, dried pools of blood on a dusty road, the only evidence that they'd ever existed at all? But that wasn't fair, and he knew it. Olimon hadn't asked to be chosen, after all, and the man had dedicated his entire life to protecting and providing for the people of his city, even taking time out of his pressing schedule to speak with a lowly servant like Alesh. Besides, Alesh didn't envy Hilrica's ruler his place as Amidan's most favoured priest, not really. He never fantasized about being chosen by one of the gods, even the lesser ones, like many men did. As far as he was concerned, the best gift the gods could ever give him would be to forget he existed at all. The common room suddenly grew completely silent, and Alesh glanced up, half expecting to see someone else, one of the drunk's friends, perhaps, standing at his table. He felt a small flash of disappointment when no one was there, and he followed the gazes of the people around him to a small, slightly raised platform at the back of the common room. A woman in a blue dress stepped out from behind a curtain onto the stage, and Alesh's breath caught in his throat. She was the most beautiful woman he'd ever seen, more beautiful even than the Lady Uriel, who Corin was taking to Fair Day, and Lady Uriel was known throughout Ilrica for her beauty and grace. The woman stood on the platform, her long blonde hair hanging around her smooth, unblemished face. She glanced shyly around the room from under long, dark lashes, her eyes like emeralds, flashing in the lantern light. No, Alesh thought, unable to take his gaze away from her. On their best day, emeralds don't come close. Unlike the popular style among many of the city's noble women, the woman's dress didn't feature a plunging neckline or a slit in the side to reveal her legs, yet Alesh felt his face heat just the same. After a few seconds, two men walked onto the small stage. One carried a stool, the other a large harp case, and they gazed at the woman with undisguised lust as they sat them down in front of her. Alesh felt a stab of jealousy at their roaming eyes, and had to fight down the urge to shout at them. "Stop acting like a fool," he thought to himself. "You've seen beautiful women before." Yet, even as he thought it, another part of his mind disagreed. "Not like this, you haven't. Not like her." The two men turned to go, and Alesh heard the woman thank them in a quiet, almost timid voice. The men turned back with looks of surprise, then turned and started quickly away, though not quickly enough to hide the grins that spread across their faces like children who'd been praised on their cleverness. Once they were gone, the woman took a deep breath, as if to gather herself, and opened the case, withdrawing a wooden harp. Unlike its owner, the harp was nothing remarkable.
Alesh had seen musicians come to the Chosen's castle to ply their trades during feasts and celebrations. They always brought richly designed instruments, often decorated with gems and golden inlays that would have cost a small fortune. The woman's own harp, in contrast, was of a light, faded wood, and displayed no such engravings or jewels. Yet she treated it with more care than Alesh remembered any of the castle musicians showing, cradling it gently, like a child, as she brought it to her lap. A moment of expectant silence passed, and then the woman's fingers began to move, gliding gently over the strings of the harp. The melody was slow and soft at first, so low that Alesh found himself leaning forward in an effort to hear, despite the stillness of the tavern. The smooth music of the harp flowed across the listeners, a river gliding over rock, seeming to smooth out the rough edges of those in the room, of the room itself, and Alesh felt as if he and those listening with him were being transported to some simpler, some better place by the song. For all of the musicians he'd heard at the Chosen's castle, Alesh had never heard anything as achingly sweet. Until, that was, the woman began to sing. Her voice was soft yet strong, quiet yet insistent, and Alesh thought that if the music of the harp had been a river, then the woman's voice was one of the great oceans itself, a thing so wide, so deep and soothing, that it could swallow a man before he knew it. Her voice served at once as a melody and a counterpoint to the gentle thrums of the harp. Alesh sat, spellbound, as he listened to the song, as he watched the lantern light lay almost lovingly across the woman's skin, watched it glimmer playfully in her green eyes. He was so engrossed by the beauty of the song that it took him over a minute before he realized he'd heard it before. It was the legend of King Liantrian and Queen Perenia, who were said to have lived and reigned before the first coming of the Nightwalkers. The two had been greatly loved by their people and had loved them in turn, but it was their love for each other that was the true legend. The two, it was said, never left each other's side. Even in times of war, before the Nightlings came, when King Liantrian led his armies against the barbarian king from the north, Perenia would not be kept away, travelling with him even when in the field. Alesh had thought he knew the story, but as the woman played and sang, it seemed to him that all of the other performances had been no more than impartial accountings, cheap summaries that lacked the burning passion and truth he now heard. Not a fire themselves, but the scorch marks left to mark its passing. The woman's fingers danced across the harp's strings in a slow rhythm, and as she sang, Alesh found himself there, among the court of that ancient kingdom, listening to the king speak as the queen sat beside him, the love that connected them almost a physical thing. Later he was walking behind them as they made their way through their private gardens, talking and laughing together as they planned how to lead their people to prosperity and peace. The song continued to weave its spell. The woman's voice grew stronger, more insistent, and the harp's play grew faster and faster until her hands were nothing but a blur on the strings, and, as if brought forth by her call, the first Nightwalkers appeared out of the shadowy veil of the night, and Alesh felt fear. There were only a few at first, then more and more until they spread across the whole of Entana like a plague, leaving nothing but corpses and grief in their wake. Liantrin was at council then, trying to bring an end to the war with the barbarians. His wife, newly with child and overcome with the sickness it sometimes brings, had, at the pleadings of the court's healers and Liantrin himself, left his side for the first time since their marriage to rest. It was there, seated among his most trusted advisers, that news first reached Liantrin of shadows given form, of monstrous creatures appearing out of the night and laying waste to his people and their homes. His counsellors, terrified, begged him to tell them what to do, to protect them. But Liantrin could think only of his wife and unborn child, and he left a group of frightened, confused men and women behind him as he rushed to his beloved's side. He was too late. Alesh wasn't surprised to feel a hot tear course its way down his cheek as he stood behind the king, watched him gaze down on the broken body of his wife. He felt his own answering rage as Liantrin, mad with grief and fury, ignored the entreaties of his counsellors and servants, and charged into the night alone, sword in hand, his dead wife's name on his lips. He did not return.
The story ended with the people of the kingdom mourning the loss of not only their queen, but their king as well. Alesh listened to every word, every note, as if they were not about strangers out of legend at all, but funeral words spoken at the death of his closest family, his dearest friends, and, as the townspeople mourned, so he mourned with them. Then it was over, the woman's singing drifting into nothingness, and the ghosts of the past once more vanished into memory as the final note of the harp hung in the air. A long moment passed, and, as one, the crowd seemed to take a breath, and the spell was broken. The common room erupted in applause and raucous talk, men elbowing and chiding each other good-naturedly, even as they wiped at the tears in their own eyes. The woman eased her harp back into its case and stood amid the thundering applause. She bowed, hugging the case to her body like a shield, her blonde hair shimmering in the lantern light, then turned and disappeared through the curtain. Alesh was suddenly struck with an almost overpowering desire to go and talk to her, and he was halfway out of his seat before he paused. "Yeah, sure," he thought bitterly. "Because a woman like that, a woman who could pick any man she wanted, why, she's been waiting all her life for an orphaned castle servant who people believe to be night-cursed. Why, you're a dream come true." He sighed and sank back into his seat, deciding that he would wait for the crowd to calm down before trying to find the person Ahriman had sent him to find. He was thinking of the woman, of the way her hands had played so gracefully across the harp strings, of the small, sad smile that her red, painted lips had formed as she played, of the way they'd parted delicately, like one of the flowers in the castle gardens, wondering what it would feel like to kiss those lips, when a hand touched him on the shoulder. He tensed and jerked around, sure that the drunk had come back for more. His eyes widened in surprise and something like guilt as he saw who had sat down beside him. She'd rubbed off her face paint and traded the blue dress for a pair of leather trousers and a ratty brown cloak, the hood of which served to cover her long blonde hair. "You're..." he stumbled, suddenly unable to find words. He felt his face heating, half convinced that she somehow knew what he'd been thinking. The woman raised an eyebrow and waited for him to continue. He swallowed hard and tried again. "You're the si- I'm no one," she interrupted sharply, casting a glance around them. "And you, judging by your show from earlier, are an overgrown bully who's always gotten through life on his looks and the size of his arms." He was so surprised and disoriented by the harshness in her voice that he actually sputtered.
What are you talking about?"
She frowned then, taking him in with her green eyes. They didn't look bright any more, like emeralds on fire. Instead, they reminded him of lonely pools deep in some hidden forest, deep and mysterious, and somehow foreboding.
"I saw what you did," she said, voice accusing. "Is it your idea of a good time to beat up on men so drunk they can barely stand? Is that how noblemen find their amusement these days?"
Alesh stared at the woman, his mouth hanging open in astonishment.
"You can't be serious," he managed. "That man is the one who tried to fight me."
She rolled her eyes.
"Oh?"
she asked.
"I'd like to see you act any better after losing your wife to one of those creatures."
She shrugged, and despite the anger in her expression and his own bewilderment, Alesh couldn't help noticing what the movement did with the curves of her breasts beneath the tight-fitting shirt she wore.
"Not that a pampered nobleman's son like you would know anything about real loss."
Alesh stared at her, incredulous, his growing anger working its way past his surprise.
"Look, lady," he said, his voice hard. "I don't know who you think you are, but you don't know a torch-burning thing about me. I'm about as far from noble as..." "Oh," she interrupted in disgust. "And a blasphemer, too. Your parents must be very proud of you." "I don't have parents," he growled. "And I don't need some puffed-up woman who thinks she's Armadan's perfect creation, needling me over something she knows nothing about. Now, I didn't know that the man had lost his wife. How could I? And what business of it is yours, anyway? I don't remember asking for your opinion on it." "Well," she said, "if you didn't want my opinion,
then maybe you shouldn't have been walking around shouting out the name Catherine Ellar to anyone who would listen, should you, Dandy?
Wait a minute,
he said, his anger fading in his surprise.
You don't mean to say that you must be stupid even for a noble, she interrupted. I've already told you, I'm no one.
The woman who you heard sing is Elizabeth. The woman who you're looking for is Catherine, and I'm none of your damned business. Now, is there a reason you're looking for Catherine? Or is it your habit to burst into taverns, pick fights, and shout names at random?
Alesh took a long, deep breath, struggling to keep his anger in check. The woman might be beautiful, but she was also more annoying than weeding the castle garden, and more difficult than shoeing a horse in heat. Suddenly, he found himself almost looking forward to his training bout with Kale.
Look, Mrs. No One, I'm about as far from a dandy as you can get, and to answer your question, no, I'm not in the habit of picking fights and shouting names at random. I was sent here by my master to find a woman named Catherine Ellar and deliver this letter.
He withdrew the paper from his cloak and flapped it in front of her. The woman's eyes widened at the gold seal that flashed on its surface.
Fool!
She hissed, grabbing for it.
Keep that hidden.
Alesh jerked the letter back, away from her grasp.
Now look, lady, he said with a smile. I'm not normally a bully, but since that's what you've decided I am anyway, I think I need to be clear that this letter was to be delivered to a Catherine Ellar, certainly not a Mrs. No One. My master was very clear on that.
The woman made a growling noise in her throat.
Fine.
She grated through clenched teeth.
I'm Catherine. Now will you give me the letter or not?
Oh?
He asked in mock surprise.
Well, I had no idea. Why, of course I'll give it to you, ma'am.
He grinned, smugly satisfied at the reddish spots of anger that crept into her cheeks. He held the letter out and she tore it from his grasp.
Is this all you were given?
She asked, in a suddenly business-like voice. All traces of anger gone.
Yes, he said with a nod. That's all. Now, see? Was that so hard, being polite?
She grinned back.
Of course not. Thanks.
She looked him up and down for a moment, a considerate expression on her face.
You look pretty fast.
He frowned.
Fast? What does that have to...
Before he could finish, the woman burst out of her chair, knocking it over and backing away from him, her hands held out as if to ward him away.
"I said, don't touch me!"
she screamed.
"Just stop it! I told you no!"
Alesh's eyes went wide in surprise once more as he reached for her, sure that she must be having some sort of fit.
"What? Look, I don't know what you're... Don't come one step closer!"
she screeched in a terrified voice. As she stumbled away, both of her hands coming to her chest and fluttering nervously.
Please! Someone help me! Please!
Alesh suddenly became aware that a dozen men had risen from their spots in the room, all of them watching him with murderous stares, and, more importantly, with murderous knives or clubs gripped in their fists.
Look,
he said, rising from his chair and backing away, his hands held up.
I didn't do anything. She...
His voice trailed off as he realized that the men were much too far gone to listen to any explanation he might give. The woman had seen to that. He shot a glance at her, and though her mouth was covered with her hand as if in fear, he could see the laughter sparkling in her green eyes once more. He started to say something sharp and cutting, something meant to take the mockery, the laughter out of her eyes, but as one, the men, apparently having decided that they didn't dare let the woman's virtue go unavenged any longer, let out shouts and charged toward him like a stampede. Alesh swallowed hard and did something he'd done almost every day since he'd been picked as Kale's training partner. He ran. He weaved in and out of men and women, too stunned or confused to do anything, dodging them when he could and knocking them aside when he couldn't. He jumped a table, bellowed in pain as his shin cracked against a chair, stumbled and rushed through the door, slamming it shut behind him.
"The woman's insane,"
he thought wildly, rubbing at his smarting shin. Angry shouts and curses rose from inside the inn, coming closer, like a chorus of snarling wolves tracking their prey. Alesh cursed, took a deep breath, and ran. Chapter 5
Catherine watched the arrogant nobleman flee the tavern, followed by a group of angry, drunken men, a small smile on her face. She was sick and tired of nobles always treating the common people like they were animals, and it was good to finally see one get what he deserved. That made her think of the letter, and she glanced down at it, swallowing hard. This was why she'd come, spending 2 weeks in travel and another singing in some broken-down inn where men would as soon stick a knife in you as say hello. She looked around to make sure no one was watching her, then folded the letter and slipped it into a pocket sewn into the interior lining of her cloak until she could find a more private place in which to read it. Movement at her side caught her attention, and she turned to see Dahl standing beside her. In the weak lantern light of the tavern, his dusky-hued skin looked almost black, and his bushy black eyebrows were drawn into a frown that matched the one on his lips.
"What?" she asked, annoyed. "He deserved it. You saw the way he was acting."
The man's expression did not change.
"Oh, come on," she said, rolling her eyes. "He's just some self-loving noble that thinks he can treat people however he wants. It'll do him good to learn that not everyone's prepared to bow and scrape for him just because his family's got money."
Dahl continued to study her with eyes so brown that they were nearly black. She stared back at him in challenge for several seconds, then finally gave up, sighing heavily and looking away. She'd been travelling with the man for over a year, and she knew him well enough to hear the reproach in his silence. Apparently satisfied that his point had been made, he sat down beside her at the table, and Catherine turned to look at him again, considering, not for the first time, how little she really knew of her companion. His dark skin marked him as a Ferinan, the nomadic people of the southern deserts who, it was said, could disappear into shadows, hiding even from the nightwalkers themselves. Of course, that was no more than conjecture. Little was known about the Ferinans, beyond the fact that they kept to themselves, and that they were said to possess grace and agility akin to the large, predatory sand cats that supposedly roamed the deserts of their homeland. Catherine couldn't say whether or not they could hide from nightwalkers, but if Dahl was typical of his people, then she could attest to their dexterity and physical poise. Even when doing something as simple as walking, the wiry-muscled man made each step seem like a part of some elaborate dance, and she'd long since lost track of the times she'd turned around to find him beside her without hearing so much as a single footstep or breath. It was unnerving at times how silently the man could move, but even more unnerving and frustrating, she thought wryly, was his unflappable calm. Ferinans, perhaps because of their reclusiveness, were considered savages by most people, but she'd never once seen the man angry or sad, had never heard him laugh or cry or shout. He greeted every situation, from a sunny morning to a gang of muggers in search of coin, with the same calm, blank expression, as if he was waiting for something specific and wasn't particularly interested in anything that came before it. In their time together, she'd seen Dahl overcome a group of scraggly highwaymen, scale a rocky mountainside, and endure the taunts of ignorant people with no more change in expression than he now showed. Yet the man still seemed to somehow let her know that he was disappointed in her.
All right," she said. "Stop looking at me like that. Maybe I was a little too hard on him. I'm just nervous is all, Dahl. Something doesn't feel right about this. It's like a melody that doesn't sound right, but I can't figure out why."
His expression didn't change, but he grunted in what she decided to take as agreement.
"Anyway," she said, talking mostly to herself, "why him? Who is he, anyway?"
The Ferinan shrugged, and she fought the urge to sigh again. Another one of the vexing things about Dahl was that he never spoke. In fact, Catherine wasn't even sure that he could speak. At first, she'd thought that his tongue had been cut out, and that was the reason why he remained silent, but knew from observing him while he ate that it wasn't the case. She'd asked him about his silence on more than one occasion, but, perhaps unsurprisingly, she'd received no answer.
"And why now? Why like this?" she said, continuing her thought. "Wouldn't it have been better, safer, to have just called us to the castle for an audience?"
She frowned, pushing a stray hair out of her eyes.
"I don't like it, Dahl. Any of it."
The dark-skinned met her eyes, and she wondered, not for the first time,
how he could seem to say so much without speaking a word.
"Of course I'll do what Chosen Alaysia asks," she said defensively. "It's the least I can do after what she did."
At her words, memories rushed unbidden, crowding into her mind. A dream, it seemed now, thinking back. Surely that little girl sitting in the street with a faded lute that had once belonged to her mother wasn't her, was it? That little girl who watched her father spend his fortune on healers and priests, who watched her mother shrivel and shrink despite their attentions, who cried herself to sleep each night, who'd brought breakfast to her mother only to find her long gone, nothing left but a corpse and a madness that would claim her father. That little girl who'd braved the streets of Valeria's poor district, playing her music in hopes of making enough to feed her father and sister for the day, always wondering if the next person to pass would want what little she had, her money, her loot, something worse. And then an old woman, stepping out of a carriage, one of her legs withered and wasted, an arm twisted and bent, the hand at the end of it retracted into a constant claw, but feeling comfort for all that. For here was a good one. Months on the street made a person a good judge of character, a good reader of faces, of eyes, and in that face only kindness, in those eyes only compassion. And though the years had come and gone since then, and Catherine was no longer that little girl with the tears in her eyes and the faded dress that had been patched so much that its original colour couldn't be guessed at, she remembered those words as if she'd heard them only yesterday.
"You have played for beggars,"
the woman had said, bending over Catherine, her hands on her cane, a smile on her wizened face.
"And you have sung to empty streets. I would see you play for kings. I would see you sing to the world."
Dahl's comforting hand on her shoulder pulled Catherine from the depths of memory, and she wiped her hand at the tears gathered in her eyes. Because of the Chosen's kindness, Catherine and her family were alive, and the money Catherine made was more than enough to see that her sister and father no longer had to worry about where their next meal was coming from. She would take the letter to the Chosen. She'd walk through fire for the woman, if she asked it of her. Still, it was strange for Alaysia to send her on weeks of travel and post her in a place such as this for something as simple as a single letter. After all, as the ruler of Gallia, Alaysia had dozens of messengers, men and women who'd been to Ilrica many times before, who knew people in Alamann's city and were granted easy access to the castle. What possible reason could she have to send Catherine instead?
"I don't like it,"
she muttered again, more to herself than Dahl. She glanced at him and felt a pang of shame. Ferenons were treated poorly everywhere, even in the southern cities of the realm where they could be seen, if rarely. Ilrica was much farther removed from the southern stretches of desert than Catherine's home city of Gallia, and many of its people had never seen one of the dark-skinned Ferenon before. For all of her complaints about their mission and about the small tavern they now found themselves in, it was Dahl who truly suffered. It was Dahl who was forced to endure murmured curses and open hostility, and he did so without complaint.
"Still,"
a stubborn voice in her head insisted, "that doesn't explain the letter." Whatever Alaysia's reasons had been, they must have been good ones. She would not have sent Catherine so far without good reason. That could only mean that she believed the contents of the letter were very important, maybe even dangerous.
No, not maybe. Dangerous and for a certainty.
Suddenly, Catherine felt eyes on her back. She turned, but those few that remained in the tavern after the nobleman's abrupt exit didn't seem to be paying her or Dahl any attention for the time being. Still, the feeling of being watched, of being hunted, only grew stronger.
"Come on,"
she said, tucking the letter inside her pocket.
"Let's get out of here."
Chapter 6 Alesha's chest was heaving, his legs burning, by the time the last of his pursuers finally gave up the chase. It was a good thing he had done so much running as Kale's training partner. Otherwise, he supposed, he'd have spent the last hour getting the shit kicked out of him by a mob of drunken fools, and that if he were lucky.
"Damn that woman,"
he thought. Yet even as he thought it,
Another part of him remembered that small, crooked smile, still wondered what it would be like to feel those lips, soft and full without being pouty like so many of the noble women's were, on his own. "I must be out of my mind," he thought, as he propped his back against the wall of a building and struggled to slow his breathing. "Smarter to wonder what it would be like to kiss a knightling. Shit. Probably safer, too." After a moment, he headed toward the wall once more, glancing over his shoulder from time to time to make sure none of his pursuers had found him. As he walked, he thought of how strange of a day it had been. First the conversation with the Chosen, then his meeting with the girl. So much had happened so quickly that he felt as if his head was still spinning. If things kept up at this rate, he thought maybe he'd set a fire in his boots and try to outrun it, just to slow things down a bit. He was thinking of the girl, not of the cruel trick she'd played on him, but of the way her hair had seemed to glow in the lantern light, when he saw a vaguely familiar form walking through the crowd on the other end of the street. He turned, and for a moment the passing people obscured the figure. He stopped, waited, and was just about to decide he'd imagined it, when the crowd parted, and he saw Kale striding down the avenue. The man was dressed plainly, unlike his usual rich, ostentatious garb, and Alesh could only catch a glimpse of him here and there as he moved through the crowd, but he knew it was him just the same. He'd recognize that walk anywhere. It was the walk of a man who thought he owned the city and everyone in it. The problem, of course, was that considering Kale's family was the richest in Ilrica, he wasn't far wrong. But what is he doing in the poor district? Alesh thought. For as long as he'd known the Chosen's apprentice, the man had always treated peasants and commoners as if they were little more than cattle, had even called them such on more than one occasion. What possible reason would he have to be in the poor district when he was supposed to have been training with the Chosen? The idea was so ludicrous that Alesh was tempted to believe that he was wrong despite his certainty. But no, it was the Chosen's apprentice, all right. Not many other people, besides the son of Lord and Lady Lorainian, the wealthiest and most powerful nobles in the city, could mimic the scowl and arrogance in the apprentice's face. And who was that walking beside him? There was something naggingly familiar about the man, but right when he thought he had it, several horse-drawn carts trundled past, the drivers shouting people out of the way in loud, angry voices that somehow managed to rise even above the loud buzz of the city streets. One of the teamsters paused to slash a whip at a dirty, shirtless youth who was filching one of his melons. A loud crack filled the air, and the youth cried out as the whip struck home, but he did not let go of his prize, and he was taking a mouthful of it even as he disappeared into the crowd. The driver threw a couple of curses after the boy, then took his whips to the nags pulling his cart, and the wagon trundled forward. As it did, Kale and his companion came into view once more. The man was as tall as the Chosen's apprentice, but thinner, almost gaunt. But if anything, he looked more dangerous than Kale. Both men wore their anger, their hatred of the world, for all to see. But where Kale's was the hot, ready kind that Alesh knew from experience, often meant a trip to the healers for anyone who got in his way, the other man's was different. The look he gave those around him wasn't full of threat, but promise, not disgust, but hope. Looking at that man's gaze, one that seemed to dare someone to do something of which he could take offence, Alesh got the distinct impression that the object of this man's anger didn't end up at the healer. They ended up at the cemetery. He wore a simple linen tunic and breeches, as many of the people of the poor district did, but only a blind man could have mistaken him for just another merchant or day labourer going about his life. He walked with too much purpose, like a man on an important mission. Again, Alesh was struck with something familiar about him, but his mind was already awhirl with so many thoughts, all jumbled together and confused, that it wouldn't come to him. He considered following the pair, did follow them for a short distance, in fact, then glanced up to where the sun had risen surprisingly far in the sky. "Night," he cursed softly. He was already late on the Chosen's errand, and the two men were walking in the opposite direction of the wall. He turned and rushed away, the incident all but forgotten as he hurried through the crowd. Chapter 7
It was almost midday by the time Alesh reached the breach in the wall, and despite all of the books he'd read about the Nightwalkers and what they were capable of, he was still shocked by the extent of the damage. The hole was as wide as 6 men standing abreast, and at least 10 feet high.
It'd take 10 men with hammers and